You have reached your destination.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to this, our very first ever Pocket GPS World podcast. I'm Darren Griffin, and joining me today is Matthew Morley, better known to many of you in the forums as Maft, who's in charge of our speed camera database. Matthew, good morning, or should I call you Maft? What do you prefer?
Maft, usually. I think I've got used to that.
Okay, Maft it is.
So, cheers, Darren. Hopefully, you'll enjoy this podcast. It's not something we've done before, and depending on how it goes today, we might never do one again, so we'll just have to see. It's probably best to treat it as a behind-the-scenes podcast. We're not going to simply read you the news and reviews from on the site, but we'll be adding to them with all the extra bits that don't really fit anywhere else.
It's probably very clear that we're not professional podcasters, and we're very much learning as we go along. But hopefully the old adage, content is king, will win through, and with a little luck, you'll be able to overlook the odd mistake, or three, or four, or five, and find enough of interest to whet your appetite for more. Before I start us off with some of the news headlines from the past week, I thought I'd mention why we think the Pocket GPS reviews are valued and important. Unlike many other sources, we do actually test the devices that we're reviewing. We road test them, we bench test them, and we put manufacturer claims under very close scrutiny. Not only does that mean that the review is based on our real opinions rather than a rehashed PR, it also means we can advise you if you're considering a future purchase, having compared it to other products we may have reviewed in the past. And I can think of one very good example of this that occurred recently when Maft reviewed a handheld GPS, who they bravely claimed water resistance for. So in the water it went, but more of that later. The news this week. First off, the TomTom being sold on eBay by the jilted husband of a wife who he'd caught visiting her lover using the previous address history. The Swindon man advertises TomTom 700 that his wife had been using to find her home of her lover, and in a hilarious listing text he wrote, "This was my wife's. May her knicker drawer be infested with the fleas of 1,000 camels." Made me chuckle when I read it. The listing went on for 2 or 3 pages and was absolutely hilarious. Had about 1 million views, and sadly eBay pulled the listing. But if you search on Google, and we'll put it in the show notes, the Daily Mail have got a cracking resume of it. The news, Garmin PNDs for Renault. Matthew, do you want to cover that one?
Yes, this is something I spotted last week, thought was quite interesting. Renault have used TomTom for quite a while for their Carminat series, particularly recently as well. And they've recently announced that they had a deal with Renault for adding the inbuilt TomTom to the new electric cars.
Yeah.
And I spotted the other week that they're actually now selling Garmin PNDs as a cheap aftermarket. Cheap aftermarket PND for people to buy, which I thought was very interesting that they're sort of jumping between TomTom and Garmin as official partners. So it'd be quite interesting to see where that goes, if they're maybe toying with the idea of switching to using Garmin or if they're just testing them.
Yeah, very, very interesting. They obviously don't want to put all their eggs in one basket there. I know TomTom have been making lots of efforts to get their PNDs into the dashboard of cars, but equally Garmin. They recently bought Navigon specifically for Navigon's contacts in the motoring industry. So, yeah, that's one that's going to pan out. I think we're all, if anyone's looking for a new car, I think we all want cheap navigation systems in them, if possible, and certainly ones that we're familiar with, like TomTom and Garmin, much better than the factory-fit ones.
Yeah, the factory-fit ones, the ones that I've seen, they're low on features and incredibly expensive for what you actually get, especially when it comes to map updates as well.
Yeah.
So it's something that's put me off. Even if one was offered, I probably wouldn't actually use it, to be honest. So.
Yeah, good point. And my Toyota's got a built-in sat nav, which is actually fairly decent for a factory fit, but it's nearly £200 for a map update. So mine's running on 2006 maps, and it'll stay that way until they sell it, I think. I was going to cover quickly that Navtech have secured a map deal with Daimler to supply the mapping for all Daimler sat nav installations. Now, it's unusual that Navtech have got the headline there, because obviously they're the supplier of the map data only, not the actual navigation software. So I'm not sure who Daimler will be using. Daimler, I presume, are still owned by Mercedes. Are they?
No idea. Yeah.
But it's still got a premium brand name to it, so it's quite a coup for Navtech to get that. And that's about it for the news this week. It's been a little bit quiet on the news front. Let's go back to your fun and games with the Magellan and the water.
Yeah, you mentioned about chucking stuff in water. We tend not to do that with everything. I'm not an idiot. There are times, I think, when there's a product that's so frustrating, it would be just so easy just to throw it in some water and just end the whole review process.
Yes, I've had a few.
Yeah. Last month, I think it was, I was reviewing the Magellan Exploris GC, which is a handheld GPS device specifically designed for geocaching. The full review is on the website, and I mentioned in the actual review about the issues what I had with water. Now, it's advertised as being waterproof to IPX7 standards, which I read this, and I had an inkling that it meant it was properly waterproof, not just splash-proof or rain-proof, so I wanted to test its claims. So I Googled it, the IPX7 standard, checked on Wikipedia, and then just to get three lots of confirmation, I gave you a ring as well. And after all that, then I chucked it in some water because I was pretty certain that IPX7 was properly waterproof. I mean, if you don't know, then it means it should be immersible in up to 1 meter of water for up to 30 minutes without any damage caused by the water. Now, I didn't have a meter of water, but I had a kitchen sink, so I filled that to a depth of only about 15 centimeters, so there wouldn't have been any adverse pressure for being close to being a meter, and put the device in it, left it turned on so I could see that it was all still working.
Yeah, so I think a sink test for IPX7 is a fairly gentle test of that. It should be fine.
Well, yeah, I mean, in theory, it should have passed a test being in a metre of water for half an hour, so 15 centimetres, not too bad. Or if you're metric, I think that's, what, about 8 inches, is it? I'm terrible at inches. Dennis will be laughing at me. He loves his inches, doesn't he?
I'm old, but I'm not that old. I'm a child of the metric age, but only just.
Yeah. Actually, no, 15 centimetres is 6 inches. It's half a ruler, isn't it? Yeah, 6 inches. Not much water. That's the point.
I wasn't sure you were going to compare it to them when you said 6 inches, but moving on.
Now. So anyway, all I wanted to do was prove that it was waterproof. And I actually expected it to meet up to its claims. I actually wrote a paragraph in the review saying that it had stood up to the challenge before I'd even put it in the water, which was probably a bit of my own downfall anyway. But if a sat-nav claims to have voice-activated commands, we test that claim. Likewise, I wanted to test the claim that the Exploris GC was waterproof. So when it stopped after 15 minutes, I was actually genuinely shocked and a little bit upset that I then had to rewrite that whole paragraph. I know, I'm really lazy. I honestly didn't expect it to die on me. I mean, thankfully, I'd already taken off the screenshots what I'd taken because they're stored on the device, so I had everything that I needed for the review.
Yeah, I mean, I've never put something in. Well, I have put something. I've put an iPad in water in a waterproof case before. So, have you actually seen anyone else review the Magellan where they put done the drop into water test, or not even the place into water test?
No, not one. I mean, I tend not to read other reviews before I write mine because I want it to be my review and not end up rewording someone else's, even if it's accidentally.
Sure.
But once I've written a review, I sometimes look up the other reviews and see if people found similar issues. But the thing is, and like you mentioned earlier, I think what makes us different with the Pocket GPS World reviews, that each review that I'd read simply said it's waterproof, but no actual mention that they tested it. It's as though they just copied the press release, added a close-up photo of it in their hand, wrote that it does X and it does Y, and that it's either great, good, or wonderful, or somewhere in between.
Yeah, I totally agree. It really irritates me that time and time again I've read reviews of products where they're clearly just rehashing the PR. The reviews, they clearly haven't used the devices. They're talking about features that don't exist, or they're showing screenshots. They've got a screenshot in the magazine of a device with a completely different software running on it. It's just lazy. The trouble is that magazines have such short deadlines that they don't have the time, generally don't have the time to review all the devices they claim they have. But if that's the case, then they really shouldn't be claiming to review them when they haven't.
But I mean, while we're on the subject of reviews as well, we've both recently reviewed two different universal mounts. I mean, you reviewed the ExoGear mount and I did the Brachytron one. And it's quite interesting that they both use sticky stuff as their main selling point as well.
Yeah, they're quite nice mounts. I've seen the Brachytron one that you reviewed one, and I've actually seen it on websites a few times in the past, and I didn't click it was the one you were reviewing. Mm. But it's interesting that they've used this sticky substance in different ways. The ExoGear, obviously the sticky part was on the suction mount, which attaches the holder. And on the Brachytron, I think that's the part that actually attaches the device to the cradle.
It is, yeah. I wonder if either of them, or even a different company, maybe make a mount that was sticky at both ends. I mean, that'd be definitely worth reviewing over a few months just to see how they cope in the long term. I mean, do you reckon sticky stuff's the way forward for these things?
Yeah, absolutely. It's perfect for a universal system, and it works really well when employed as part of the suction base. I mean, on the ExoGear, it helped it to stick to surfaces that other suction solutions just fall off. They won't even begin to grip to, like, leatherettes, yeah. Dashboard tops, and like. What I'd like to see is an ExoGear that's got a large suction cup on the base and then perhaps a smaller suction cup with this sticky stuff on the mountainside, and you can just suction it onto the back of your sat nav with the sticky stuff as well. The combination of the two should work quite well, I'd have thought.
I mean, it's one of those things. It depends on the shape, because the one that I reviewed was specifically for mobile phones. So you need a bit of a flat back, really. So some of the other sat navs that I tried it with, you couldn't really stick, because it depended on the shape of the back of the device. But I'm sure if these things become more popular, or maybe even if TomTom or Garmin start designing and giving out the sticky ones with their mounts, then they'll design the sat navs themselves so that they would fit. It could be quite a different way of doing things, or maybe as an option.
Yeah, I'd definitely like to see the Exagear suction mount deployed onto other custom mounts. It does work really well. I mean, it's a much more efficient mount than the others I tested, and I thought I'd seen them all. You know, we've seen polyurethane suction cups and rubber suction cups and large suction cups, but this one does seem to do all it said. You know, it claims to be able to stick to some weird surfaces, and all the ones I've tested so far it does. Although typically the moment I reviewed it, about 5 posts in on the forum, someone found a dashboard it doesn't stick to. If you've got a Skoda Octavia, apparently.
All right.
I don't know what their dashboards are made of, but it miserably fails to attach to that. So
how strange.
I'll have to try and find a Skoda dealer and wander in and try it. I'm interested in what kind of material it is. It must be, unless it's sort of fluffy or something. I don't know.
Maybe.
I still prefer the custom mounts for my main device, just because I like an active dock. You can drop it in and it's charged and connected to the car. But certainly for testing, and if you've got a car, or you swap cars, or you swap devices, the universal mounts, the Exagear works really well for me.
Yeah, I mean, I use a lot of different things in the car, whether it's music or my phone or different sat navs that I'm using or reviewing. So a good, really universal mounting solutions would be quite cool. I mean, ProClips are great, and I love them, and I do have them for most of my things. But for each time you get a new phone or you get a new car, you've got to get your new attachments, your different holders. And you can't beat the quality, though, because the last thing you want is for a £300 device just to fall off and smash on the gear stick just because it was a cheap and nasty mount.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had a few mishaps with suction cups falling off the windscreen and sat-navs bouncing across the centre console you're driving. It's not a pleasant experience. And as you say, these things can be worth £200, £300 plus. So you know, a small investment in a decent cradle is probably money well spent, I'd say. Yeah, they aren't cheap, but as you say, £40 to protect something worth £300 plus has to be worth it. It's a good investment, I'd say. And I'm still using the Brodit Pro Clip that was designed for an iPhone 3G, so it must be probably 3 or 4 years old now. Luckily, it was an adjustable one that you could adjust the width of to accommodate iPhone in cases. And so I've been able to use it with the 3G, the 3GS, and with a little bit of butchery on the sync cable, it fits the 4 fine. So whether it'll survive the iPhone 5, we've yet to see.
Well, if it don't fit it, then if it's going spare, then I'll take that off you at the Christmas get together.
It's interesting actually that I for a long time I started in GPS with Pocket PCs and Pocket PC sat nav apps. Then the P&Ds came out, the TomTom and the TomTom Go Classic and that, and I didn't go back to a Pocket PC for about 4 or 5 years. But now with the iPhone, I very rarely pull a P&D out now unless I'm testing one. iPhone's always in my pocket. I've got the cradle on the dash. If I'm out somewhere and I suddenly need navigation, it's just easy enough to go for the iPhone. What's your favour?
I tend to use the iPhone, or I'm actually forcing myself to use an Android phone at the moment because I think I should like them a bit more than I do. I still do prefer the iPhone. If it's a shortish journey, I tend to use the iPhone. Like you say, it's just in my pocket, it's there, it's ready. I can stick my music playing through it straight away, get the camera alert warnings, easy to update, no need to connect it to the computer, all that. If I'm going on a long journey, I'm not sure why, I tend to still use a dedicated sat-nav itself. I think it's probably that in the back of my head, in the early days of the sat-nav on the iPhone, I used to have quite a lot of issues because I was using an old 3G, so memory wasn't very good. They'd crash. If it crashed, it wouldn't restart all the time. So on a long journey, I do prefer a dedicated PND, but I will still have the iPhone with me as a just-in-case or for the Google searches and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's fair comment. I must admit, the old iPhone 3Gs weren't brilliant, but for a long journey, I probably will dig out a TomTom, put it on the cradle, just larger screen. It's slightly more reliable. And they see if you fiddle around with iTunes music and that, you don't have to worry about losing your navigation.
Yeah, and when the kids want to start playing Angry Birds on the phone, you can still get your navigation.
Well, my daughter Charlie has a, she's got an iPad on a headrest mount in the back, so she's watching movies. But I was thinking of what they need on the iPad now is an app, much like you see in the aircraft, where you've got a quick map that flicks up, shows your destination, yeah, departure, and how the journey time, how far are you away, and then just flicks back to wherever she's playing. So she should say, "Are we nearly there yet, Daddy? How far have we got to go? How long are we going to be?"
Maybe there's it'll be how long's left on my battery, Dad.
Yeah, and one thing I really do like is TomTom's HD traffic, and I would like to see an equivalent on more platforms. I know we've got traffic on most devices now, but something that's alive like HD traffic is something that I've really come to rely on, especially on a long journey, just to be able to verify that, you know, the road ahead's clear, or if you've got traffic coming. I think being forewarned of it means you can be a little bit more calm when you get stuck in the traffic, you know?
Yeah, I mean, coming back from Cornwall one time, I was on, I think it was the TomTom Via Live. It popped up saying there was traffic within a couple of junctions, and do you want to reroute? And I thought, well, I'll do it just for the sake of it. It had been, I think, about an 8-hour journey so far, because we'd stopped a couple of times. Yeah. And as we pulled off at the junction, as the road flew over the motorway that we just turned off, we could just see the massive tailback. And I thought, that's just saved us probably another 2 or 3 hours for getting home. Just it was a longer route, but obviously because of the tailbacks, it was that much quicker.
Yeah.
So it was quite interesting just to see how accurate that was, because a lot of the time, I think I've mentioned it when I've reviewed stuff, you tend not to be able to review the traffic service, because if you follow it and you go away and you do a different route, you've no idea whether you're actually missing anything or not. But that was a great example of actually being able to see the massive traffic jam.
Yeah, that's true. It's very hard to know whether how accurate it is when it tells you to divert. If you divert, you don't know how bad the traffic was. And if you sit in the traffic, you don't know whether the diversion was clear or not, do you?
Yeah.
It's nice when if you can go turn across over the motorway and look back and see the traffic, you would have been sat in and think, oh, there, but for the grace of God goes I.
Yeah.
I drive my wife Sue to work every morning. She works in a hospital about 10 miles away, and it means a short journey in the M3. And every morning before I set off, I load up the TomTom with the navigation and let traffic just warn me, because the M3, one morning it can be clear, the other morning it can be chocker. I've no other options of which way to go there. They're all equally bad, but at least I know before I get there whether to take
whether you need to set off 10 minutes earlier.
Set off a bit earlier and take a few deep breathing exercises and put a podcast on the car stereo to calm me down. You know, if I know I'm going to be sat in traffic, I'm calm about it. It's when I come around down the slip road and suddenly see the traffic before me and wasn't aware of it, that's when I get stressed. It's silly, I know, but it's just a nice sort of peace of mind thing. Yeah, but anyway, so it's we're rapidly approaching the end of September, which means October's around the corner, and very soon Sainsbury's and Asda and the like will have the Christmas decorations in the shops, and we'll start thinking about dark nights and winter drawing in. But being as we're an online business, and most of us only actually ever get to see each other once or twice a year, and we get the Christmas get-together, which is coming soon. That's when the Pocket GPS team and moderators all get together in a hotel somewhere and have a good bash. So we'll be seeing you soon.
Yeah, I think last year I came down for a day, but other than that, I usually only see you at Christmas. It's one of those things where when you work solely online, and I'm 200 miles away from you guys as the crow flies, it's quite different. I mean, the job what I had before, I was working in a lab with, I think, 12, 13 other people. It was a steady 9 to 5, and all I would do was I would go to work 9 to 5, that was it, come home, and that was done. Whereas when you're working at home, any hour of the day, with a laptop, two cats, and a one-year-old at the time when I started working for you, it takes a bit of getting used to. I mean, conversing with people is usually email, MSN, Twitter, or occasionally an actual phone call. So it's quite interesting. It does have its advantages, though, because I don't have to see your lovely radio face on a daily basis. Sorry, I couldn't resist just getting that one in.
Yeah, I come from an IT background where I was travelling to London every day and working on client sites, fixing computers and servers and the like. So it was quite a change when you sort of switch to a job where you're based at home 24 hours a day. Your only communication with the outside world is, you know, Twitter, Facebook, Skype, and email. But there are many advantages, as you say. I can work whenever I choose to. So if I'm working at 7 or 8 o'clock at night, it means I can take an hour off in the morning to watch Jeremy Kyle. I don't really, but I've fed
up. But you could.
I could if I
the options there.
I could if I wanted to, and it means I can start work in my dressing gown with a coffee in my hand at 7:30 in the morning, and then take a break to go and pop to the gym and the like. So yeah, but I think overall I probably do far more hours than I used to when I was working in the employed sector.
Oh yeah, same here.
But still good fun.
Definitely. Number of times I've been up at 2 a.m. just because during the day I've been out shopping or sorting the kids out, stuff that you can do that you can just do because you're working on your own. And obviously it's not something I would do on a daily basis, staying up till 2, but if it needs it, then it can be done. Like if I've been away for a week, last month we went away for a few days for a wedding anniversary. And when we came back, there was a lot of camera submissions to process. So a lot of that was done in the wee hours of the morning, just trying to catch up. So it definitely has its advantages, but an occasional disadvantage. Your conversations are all online or via phone, and it's sometimes a bit strange not actually meeting up with people. So it's always good to get down at the Christmas do just to see people face to face and have a chat and a bit of a banter and one or two drinks.
Yeah, absolutely.
But only one or two.
It's always interesting when you meet a new member of the team for the first time, somebody you might have been chatting to in the forums and online for 6 or 7 months, and it's the first time you've ever met them face to face, and it's interesting to see whether your mental image of them matches the real life perception.
Yeah.
Really, you're far less good looking than you claim to be.
I've never claimed to be good looking, though.
And if anyone ever thinks we're going to do a video podcast, the answer is no. I've definitely not got a face for video. I'm definitely made for radio.
Yeah.
So anyway, thanks for listening. It leaves only for me to say, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you'll find me at Darren Griffin on Twitter, or obviously on Pocket GPS World in the forums. And Matthew, where can they find you?
Same again on Twitter. My username is Maft, M-A-F-T, and the forum username Maft as well.
Great. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Cheers. Bye.